Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Bill Krivoshik to the broadcast. Bill is the Senior Vice President and Chief Information Officer of Marsh & McLennan, a global professional services firm providing advice and solutions in the areas of risk, strategy, and human capital. Bill is the first Corporate Chief Information Officer at Marsh & McLennan, and in this role, he's led the development of the company's overarching technology strategy and architecture, evaluating platforms, products, and services across the company. Prior to joining Marsh & McLennan, Bill was CTO at Thomson Financial, where he oversaw the company's technology and information operations globally. During his time there, Bill and his team streamlined products and functions, integrating platforms accumulated through more than 40 acquisitions to successfully increase productivity and improve customer retention. Prior to his time at Thomson, Bill was Chief Information and Operations Officer at Citigroup Incorporated's Travelers Life and Annuity, and Managing Director and CTO for Citigroup's Global Investment Management. Prior to Citigroup, he was a CIO at AIG. Bill has a BSE degree in Electrical Engineering and Computer Science from Princeton University, and an MS in Computer Science from Stanford University. I recently caught up with Bill in his office in New York City, and our conversation covered World-Class IT Principle 1, People, as Bill shared his thoughts on the future role of the CIO, Principle 2, Infrastructure, as we discussed Bill's efforts to centralize aspects of business unit IT at Marsh & McLennan, Principle 3, Project and Portfolio Management, as we discussed his approach to IT governance, as well as some other topics. Welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Thanks, Peter, and welcome to New York.
Thank you so much. Bill, I wonder if you could take a moment and describe Marsh & McLennan's business and your role in it.
Sure. Marsh & McLennan Companies is a global professional services firm that provides consulting, advice, and solutions in risk, strategy, and in human capital. We have five operating companies: Mercer, which provides consulting, outsourcing, and investment services in the human resources space; Marsh, which delivers risk and insurance services and solutions for clients; Guy Carpenter, which is a leading risk and reinsurance specialist; and the Oliver Wyman Group, which delivers consulting services to clients; and Kroll, which is the world's leading risk consulting company.
Excellent. Well, I was interested to note that you're the first corporate CIO. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about the rationale for establishing the role now.
Sure. I think I'm obviously biased and think the role probably should have been here all along. I think what happened was, about a couple of years ago, Brian Duperreault, who's our new CEO.
Yes.
Brian had been the CEO at ACE prior to that, was a senior executive at AIG, and Brian had retired after a very successful career out of ACE. And the board here was looking for a new CEO. There were some issues with regulatory issues a few years back, and then the management that was put in place, the company just wasn't really getting the return that we needed to get from our capital. And so they brought Brian in, and I think Brian brought a whole different set of views. And I think primarily he looked at corporate functions as something to leverage across the operating company. So he really has a philosophy that we have five operating companies, they run as standalone businesses, but guess what? That doesn't mean you should ignore the leverage you can get by looking at certain things in a horizontal view. We've had for about 4 years a shared service in technology with the infrastructure area, which I'll say 3.5 of our operating companies are participants in today.
Okay.
And that's things, all the plumbing, right? So the data centers, the networks, the desktops, the servers, et cetera. And we've had five CIOs in each of the business units, and each CIO's really looked at adding value to their business, being efficient, being productive, leveraging technology within their business unit. But there's really been nobody looking at it across the operating companies and saying, is there opportunity to share or steal things from one to the other? Is there ways to leverage, you know, simple things like our vendor spend across five significant companies?
Yes.
And so it just made sense to put in place a function that would look at technology, which is critical to all our businesses, and see how we can get the advantages of being a large company like we are.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense. You mentioned that 3.5 of the 5 participate. Is there a rationale for the 1.5 that do not, or is there a plan to bring them into the fold, so to speak?
Yeah, I think the, you know, quite frankly, the 3.5 that participate include the two larger companies, Mercer and Marsh.
I see.
When the church infrastructure group was put together, the rationale was, let's get those big guys right.
Yes.
There, you know, a fair bit of consolidation, a fair bit of, you know, fixing things, taking best practices from each of them. I think we're pretty well along that path now, and we're starting to have conversations with the 1.5, including Kroll, which I know you've done an interview with Jeff Kubacki,
who's our
CIO there, to talk about some services and some leverage we might get by providing it at a shared service MMC level.
Excellent. And the process, especially, I guess, if we can look into the future a little bit, once the shared service is more broadly disseminated, do you have a thought as to the process of thinking through which attributes of IT that are relevant for the different areas remain under the autonomy of the leader there versus those that are brought into the fold? The obvious ones that should be brought into the shared service. As you dive deeper, how does that process work?
So the trick is, how do we get leverage by looking at things across the operating companies without destroying the advantage you have of technology being very close to your business and very close to your customers?
Yes.
And so, you know, on one level, there's some pretty obvious answers, right? So data centers, it doesn't make sense to have each of the operating companies manage that. You can get some real economies of scale, right? The whole model that you know, the big outsourcers use is the economies of scale, you know, leveraging your technology spend, some kind of the vendor management procurement process makes a lot of sense to have in the shared service.
Yep.
Application development, our 5 operating companies are very, very different. In some cases, we do have some applications we may share across operating companies. You know, the obvious ones are the corporate systems, right? So the finance systems, the HR systems.
Yes.
But customer facing applications, very different because we're 5 very different businesses.
Yes.
So that will remain, obviously, in the operating unit, you know, close to the business, close to the customer. There are some things in the middle, and we'll sort through this, right?
Yes.
But there are things like, I could see setting up a shared service that would include testing, that would include things like database administration, right?
Yes.
So things that are more fungible skills. And guess
what?
By putting them in a shared service, you can hopefully leverage the peaks and valleys of the requirement need, you know, the resource needs across the operating company. So when one operating company may have a ton of large implementations going on with a lot of testing,
yes,
we may be in a valley where another one is kind of done with their cycle and, you know, a little bit off from the next cycle, big investment in technology. So you can kind of flatten out that demand curve.
Well, it sounds like actually as you walk through these, you're in some ways walking through your plans for the near and medium term, perhaps. I wonder if you can, beyond some of those logical steps of expanding the shared service and making sure that it's up and running and doing so as effectively as possible. What are some other plans that you have going forward?
Yeah, I think our biggest plan, and it's one that we've committed to our senior executive team and that we've committed to the board, is really, without getting into specific numbers, but really taking our technology spend down, but at the same time taking it down from things that are less value-added and putting some of it to the bottom line and some of it to building, you know, building technology that'll either be for competitive advantage or get additional efficiencies and productivity.
Yes.
So, you know, for example, we'd like to flip the ratio. We'd like to spend more on new development than on maintenance of applications.
Yes.
And we'd like to spend more on applications than on infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So as we can reduce our infrastructure costs, we can drop some of that to the bottom line and we can put some of it in reinvesting into applications. As we reduce our maintenance or our kind of running the business costs in the application space, we can start building new stuff that will either, you know, increase revenue or decrease operating costs.
That makes a lot of sense. As I think about the structure that you have with a centralized IT function that you've developed and, of course, the divisional IT functions and the relevant CIOs in each of those silos.
Right. So how do you manage it?
Exactly. You already know where I'm going. What's the process of governing all that?
Well, it's funny, and it's not this way now, but when I was interviewing for the position, I think the analogy I used when I was meeting with people is, because I've done this sort of thing in the past, I've been both a divisional CIO listening to the enterprise CIO.
Yes.
And I've been an enterprise CIO trying to get the divisional CIOs to kind of change the paradigm from just a strictly vertical to a horizontal,
yes,
horizontal view. It's a little bit like herding cats, right? And so, and you know, the truth is we could mandate things. I could mandate things and I'd absolutely fail. So one of the things we did was set up a technology council. Technology council, I chair it, has the 5 CIOs, my head of the infrastructure group, our CTO, my CFO, and a guy who reports to me who focuses on operational efficiency and effectiveness. And we meet every 2 weeks, and we do a few things. One, we're looking, monitoring, we've got these targets in terms of taking technology spend out of business as usual and putting it into changing the business technology. And so we're monitoring that and seeing how that's progressing. And we're also setting up governance rules. For example, we said it's a pretty simple rule, right? We said that if an operating company wants to put some new technology in and somebody else has a technology that does something pretty similar, they've got to come to the group and say why they're not going to use what the other operating company already has.
I see.
Peer pressure is a wonderful thing, right? To get people to kind of look at the common good as well as what's best for their individual operating company.
Exactly. And I suppose there's probably also advantages to having each of those CIOs, each of the participants in this IT council, listening to the priorities that are emerging out of each of their silos, perhaps for idea sharing or best practice sharing.
Absolutely, because it turned out we had a couple operating companies that were independently going on a path of looking at kind of lightweight or lighter weight CRM applications.
Yes.
It made a lot of sense for them to work together and come to look at the solutions together and figure out what made sense for each of their business, but there's some real leverage in being able to do it across a larger universe.
Exactly.
And then we're trying to take it down the next level. So CIOs meet regularly. We're going to have the architects meet on a regular basis.
Okay.
Again, so if you think about it, the architects can share best practices, they can share standards, they can share where things are working in one operating company or another. They're also in a position to know everything that their operating company, their development units are doing, right?
Yes.
Because they know they're usually pretty upfront in the process as we're putting in new systems, new applications. Another one that makes a lot of sense to have a group focusing on at the next level would be all our PMOs. Again, similar thing, can kind of share experiences, know where we've done similar things in one operating company or another, and also get some tools and best practices from each other, but also understand what the pipeline of work is.
Exactly. Bill, as someone who's had a CIO role in multiple organizations now, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how you see that role evolving.
Sure, Peter. I think it's interesting because periodically you hear a discussion in the trade press about what does it take to be a good CIO? I want to be a CIO at the table. And
yes.
What does that mean? And sometimes the conversation goes between should a CIO be very technical or very business focused? And I think it's a little bit of both, right? Mm-hmm. And I think at least, using my career as a sample of one, right, what's been successful is starting out with a technology background, mm-hmm. having deep technology skills, but realizing that technology is here to service the business, really here to increase revenue or reduce costs,
yes.
and should really be run like a business, the technology function. So the management, governance, and business skills, I think, are more critical than the technology skills. You need the technology skills to do it. It's almost like the cost of entry to the game. And I think that if you look at the economic environment we've all gone through recently and where we think it's going to go in the next 1, 3, 5, even 10 years,
yes.
A CIO needs to be a good business person first and foremost. And if they have outstanding technical skills and the CEO wants to reduce costs, become more efficient, and that's, priority 1, 2, and 3, the technology skills will help do that, but you really need business skills to understand what that means.
Exactly.
And likewise, if you're in an upswing and you're looking at a CEO who wants to build new products, expand geographies, increase revenue. Again, business skills, right? Because you want to place your bets where you're going to get the best return for investment. So I think
exactly.
It's somebody who can understand the technology, really keep the technology team honest,
yes.
Right?
So
be, have enough grounding in technology to know what questions you should ask and when you should feel comfortable and when you shouldn't. But ultimately, then take that and apply it to the business problems your business is facing.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense. And I know that in your past, you've worked for companies who were outsourcers, who accepted business processes from companies and took them over from them. And I wonder the extent to which that is a trend that appears to be here to stay and organizations are doing less development, per se, less coding and so forth. Is the balance then between the technical skills and the business skills, do you see that getting to the point where the business skills become that much more important?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you always run the you try to walk that line that says, if I am going to use a third-party provider
yes.
to do the really deep technical skills. What happens if that relationship doesn't work?
Right.
What happens
yes.
if either microeconomic or macroeconomic
yes.
costs go out of start to go the wrong direction? And so you really need to. I think there's certain skills, even deep technical skills, that I would never outsource, right? And I'm thinking of things like your architects, right?
Yes.
People who really understand the deep technology skills. I think we also, you know, in addition to using outsourcing vendors, it's some places I've been previously, we've had a lot of offshore work that happened to be captives.
I see.
But it's still, in either case, whether it's a third party or it's, you know, your captive that just happens to be halfway around the world, you really need strong management skills to be able to make that work from a long distance. And I think, you know, the business, I think you're right. I think the business skills become even more important. The business skills, the management skills, the relationship skills, all of those are absolutely critical.
Exactly. Makes sense. As you look into your own personal crystal ball and you look out into the future, what sort of emerging technologies excite you? As I hear some of these plans, I can certainly understand that there might be some new technologies the organization might explore in order to facilitate, for instance, this collaboration and making sure that ideas are shared in the appropriate way.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's interesting. We will probably always be, you know, looking at emerging technologies, but ones that have a real business proposition to them. And so we're doing some things and we'll look at, you know, first of all, infrastructure. I think it always makes sense to really look at your infrastructure because you want to reduce the operating costs so that you can deploy those dollars against, those resources against higher value added things that are new to the business. And then we may include infrastructure. So when we look at cloud computing, well, you know, we're using software as a service for a few of our applications.
Yes.
Quite frankly, we're looking at building an internal cloud within our data centers, right? So we'll, you know, we'll look at things like that. I think collaboration and social media are absolutely two things that we're going to be focused on. You know, a couple of our businesses are really consulting firms.
Yeah.
And if you think about the need for global consulting firms to be able to share experiences that they've had at different clients, with clients or among the colleagues themselves, collaboration is absolutely a critical function.
Yes.
Social media, you know, we're trying to figure that one out, I think, as everybody is, right?
Exactly.
We're doing some things internally for our employee base because we think it's important and we'll help build some real communities that will work together with some of the that we can use some of the social media tools for. And we're looking at some of our clients. You know, that one, I think will be important to us. I know will be important to us. I think I'd be lying if I said I knew the exact applications. And I think maybe I'm not the great visionary that some people are, but again, I tend to think that you know, this stuff, you stay in front of it far enough that you're watching it and you pilot it and you test it.
Yes.
Right. But do it a smart way and make sure it's providing business value.
Exactly. That makes a lot of sense. It also strikes me that so many of your businesses are in the business of information, business of knowledge, and probably the degree to which the organization can spread that knowledge effectively, not recreate the wheel and so forth, is very important. Is it safe to say that knowledge management is something?
Not knowledge management, and I guess I included that as kind of and maybe that's wrong, right, in the taxonomy, but I included that kind of as part of collaboration.
Yes.
Right? So collaboration is,
we're
working on something right now, but collaboration can also be, I know somebody must have done this before, right?
Exactly.
Somewhere in this broad universe of MMC, how can I find out who the resources are, who the experts are, who I can talk to, and maybe there are working papers or whatever that I can use to leverage on my next assignment.
Exactly. Well, that makes good sense. Well, good. Bill Krivoshik, thank you so much for joining us in the Foreman Request IT. It's been a great conversation.
Great. Thanks, Peter. Enjoyed it.
Just listen to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World-Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World-Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World-Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to Meta Strategies' five principles of world-class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people, doing the right jobs at the right time, it will be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure, defined as software, hardware, networks. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will likely become stuck in a reactive mode, constantly fighting fires. And if systems and hardware work reliably, on the other hand, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It's important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and quality assurance, through to support and all other aspects of the IT department, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business. Now, if the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy-setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming crucial to corporations, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metisstrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metisstrategy.com. Our sound editor is Chris Davis, our web editor is Christian Dooley, and our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.